Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 15, 2017. A new South Sudanese opposition alliance has formed.
It is always problematic for any rebel groups, problematic for them to agree on how they can move together in terms of leadership, in terms of who can be a leader, who can lead, and how do we do a strategy to be able maybe to overtake the other opponent.
And thousands of IDPs fleeing violence pour into disputed Abyei region.
People from the area of Apuk and Agok have already arrived here due to the ongoing intercommunal fighting going on in their area. Some of the IDPs, including Nuer and Roeng, come from as far as the Unity State.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new coalition calling itself a political opposition forces, which comprises of armed and unarmed South Sudanese opposition groups, issued a statement over the weekend after holding a teleconference on the situation in South Sudan. The group includes the SPLM-IO, National Salvation Front, former SPLM detainees, among others. Pagan Amum, who signed the August peace deal on behalf of the former detainees, says the group wants to, in his word, rescue South Sudan from collapse. Amum says the coalition is working to organize a meeting of all opposition groups to join hands and bring peace to South Sudan.
The situation is very dangerous. The country needs to be rescued as soon as people can. That is why the opposition forces are coming together to unite their efforts and come together with a clear vision and a clear program of how to rescue the country. Also to mobilize the region, the continent, and the international community to come to the rescue of our country because the peace agreement has collapsed.
What plans is this new united opposition having for the people of South Sudan?
The first step is for the opposition to come together and develop full consensus, a clear rescue plan for the country. And we believe the elements of this plan would be, one, to push for a new inclusive political process, to push for a round table bringing together all the stakeholders, all the South Sudanese stakeholders, whether the political forces or the armed groups, the civil society, the church leadership.
Do you have any timeline as to when the meeting will actually take place?
We are engaging a number of countries in the region, and we are very hopeful that this will be happening. I am not able to specifically talk about a specific country, but we are engaging all our countries in the region, our neighbors, who are concerned for us.
Who is leading this new coalition?
I'm sure it is going to be a collective leadership, and that the formalization of that will come through the discussion that is being planned. The leaders have agreed to organize a face-to-face meeting. We have been meeting in the cyber world for a number of times. We are engaged continuously, almost on a daily basis. We are discussing all these issues, that we need to come together, and we will definitely agree on the modalities and the forms of this organization and how we will be working together.
Can you comment on the recent development in South Sudan where the former SPLA General Chief of Staff, General Paul Malong, was fired? He went to Yirol on his way to Awil. He came back.
Yirol and Malong were the people who introduced violence and instituted this hegemonic regime in Juba. And therefore, they were careful, because if they were to start fighting each other, that would have been the end of the regime. So I believe it is that consideration that made them to opt for negotiating this thing and backing off from violent confrontation which was about to take place.
There are lots of speculations in South Sudan. There's a lot of uncertainty in the air. If you're given a chance to speak directly to the South Sudanese, what would you tell them?
It is time to learn from our experience in the last few years from independence, and it is time to change our direction. It is time to stop this violence and this war. It is time to move away from tribalism and sectarianism. It will not take us anywhere, but it is going to destroy the country. And for all South Sudanese from all the tribes, we have to come together and accept ourselves as equal stakeholders in this new country, accept ourselves as equal citizens, and build a system in which there will be no discrimination on the basis of tribe or region you come from or gender, so that we are able to build a country that belongs to all of us.
That's Pagan Amum, member of the former political detainees. He was speaking to me yesterday on a poor telephone line from an undisclosed location in East Africa. We apologize for the quality of that phone line. A Juba-based analyst says the new alliance of South Sudanese opposition groups will only make a difference if they truly work together. Jacob Chol says South Sudanese opposition groups have a history of not being able to overcome internal power struggles. He says if they unite, they can have an appealing message to millions of South Sudanese suffering from hunger and insecurity.
Jacob Chol, professor of political science at University of Juba, says the opposition leaders who signed the communique to work together come from various tribes across South Sudan.
If you look at them, you know, look at the influence from the ethnic group of the geographical areas they represent. So if they really, really unite in spirit and in genuine sort of coming together, there could be sort of an influence and sort of a threat that they can give to the government of South Sudan.
But Chol says South Sudanese opposition groups have a long history of failing to work together in order to reach a common goal.
It is always problematic for any rebel groups, problematic for them to agree on how they can move together in terms of leadership, in terms of who can be a leader, who can lead, and how do we do a strategy to be able maybe to overtake the other opponent. So I will not be quite surprised to hear in the couple of days or in the future that they could not be able to work together as a rebel group.
Chol says the new group will also be scrutinized to determine if they really have the best interest of the people of South Sudan at heart.
The government will also use its own tools to be able to penetrate within all these groups to ensure that some of the group are bought off, are brought on board, and make sure that they are given position. Because the whole argument of South Sudanese conflicts, as you look at it, is basically about power. I mean, the issues of reform are not critical on all these conflicts that we see in South Sudan.
Chol says this new alliance of opposition groups has come at a time when South Sudanese are reeling under serious economic hardships, and many believe the government does not represent the vast majority of people in South Sudan. The seven signatories of the communique say they are open to dialogue with the government and any other concerned parties. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Officials in the disputed Abyei region say an estimated 25,000 displaced South Sudanese seeking shelter in the area are putting a huge strain on local resources. Kwal Alor Kwal, the newly appointed Abyei administrator, says the IDPs are mostly women and children who fled violence in the former Unity State and more recently from Apuk and Agwak communities of Gogorial State. Kwal says the overwhelming number of internal displaced persons means there are not enough facilities, water resources, or food to go around. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Chief Administrator Kwal Alor Kwal says since February, thousands of South Sudanese IDPs have arrived in the Abyei area.
A lot of people are coming because most of them either they are affected by the war or fighting in the neighboring areas on the neighboring state and so on. Some also migrated to Abyei looking for better life.
Kual says Abyei's residents are also suffering from economic hardships and food insecurity. Bolobag Deng Kual, the paramount chief of the Ngok Dinka in Abyei, says thousands of civilians from Gogriali State arrived over the past few weeks following the intercommunal fighting between the Apuk and the Agwok communities over the disputed border. Speaking in Arabic, Deng says most of them are women and children who have no food and shelter.
People from the area of Apuk and Agwok have already arrived here due to the ongoing intercommunal fighting going on in their area. Some of the IDPs, including Nuer and Roeng, come from as far as the Unity State and are trying to settle here in Abyei.
Deng says some health facilities have run out of the drugs, while others close together because they don't have an emergency supplies needed to provide services. Because so many IDPs have recently poured into the area, Deng says. Some residents must travel as far as Anet, Kwajok, and Wau to receive medical care.
There are some non-governmental organizations operating in the area trying to support the health facilities, but what they are supplying is not enough compared to the available population.
21-year-old resident of Abyei, Awal Majok, says the main Abyei Civil Hospital is operational but lacks basic equipment and drugs. Speaking in Arabic, Majok says most health workers have left their jobs and are seeking better payment jobs with non-governmental organizations or United Nations agencies. Majok says she hopes the new administration of Abyei is going to improve the health services. We need more attention on women and children, she says. We want them to bring doctors who can carry out surgical operations here in Abyei and bring more medicines for us, Majok says. 35-year-old Anei Doldol fled the recent violence from Gogriali State in early April with his family of four. Speaking in Arabic, Dol says he took his family to Abyei because the Ngok Dinka are good people. He says he hopes to secure a piece of land so he can farm and produce food for his family.
I know that the security in general in South Sudan is not all that good, and many people are afraid now to go out and cultivate. Now in Abyei, people are just within the town, but they don't go out. But when I came here, I heard that the people of Abyei have signed a peace deal with their neighbors. There is a little bit of stability.
Gul Muhammad, head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Abyei, confirms that aid agencies' resources are stretched in due to the large number of IDPs.
In the beginning, they received one-time food assistance from WFP. ICRC provided one-time emergency food at a time, and they continue to receive some kind of nutrition support from MSF.
Muhammad says due to the limited assistance being provided by aid agencies in the Abyei area, some IDPs decided to move to Agok, while others have crossed into the neighboring Sudan, where they hope to have more access to humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, cattle raids and abductions continue between youth from Buma and Jonglei states. What's being done about it? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. question today.
Do creative and talented youth get encouragement and opportunity in your country?
Yeah, I think if you came out and showed that you're good, then opportunity would avail itself.
Not in my country, and even in the whole of Africa, I think we don't. When you go to a place like Israel, even small children are given the opportunity to put their ideas and thoughts together, but not in Africa or my country.
They hardly get it because everybody is fighting to become someone, and it's only those who are at the top that enjoy that privilege. And the less privileged who are talented and creative, they don't get it.
Yeah, I think so. I've been seeing the effort of the government in improving the lives of youth who are the talent.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A ministerial committee has been formed to try to end intercommunal fighting between armed youth from Jonglei and Buma states. The committee is calling on the youth from both communities to return their respective states. Young men from Jonglei occupied parts of Buma state, demanding that stolen cattle and abducted children be returned. First Vice President Taban Dengai led a high-ranking government delegation to both states to try to resolve the conflict, which has forced thousands to flee their villages. Tito Justin has this report for VOA from Juba.
The peace dialogue between Dinka Bor and Murle communities includes state government officials, youth leaders, and representatives of the UN mission in South Sudan. Committee member Achil Malith Bangol read a statement yesterday on behalf of First Vice President Guy when the delegation returned to Juba.
The high-level committee is appreciative of the support by the special representative of the Secretary General of United Nations mission in South Sudan, Mr. David Shira, for peace in Greater Jonglei area and South Sudan in general. Number six, condemn all the acts of child abduction, killing of innocent people and cattle raiding, and call on all the communities to renounce violence as a means of solving their problems.
Bangol says the committee witnessed firsthand a high level of violence between the two communities. Boma and Jonglei authorities have accused youth from each other's communities of repeated child abductions and cattle raids. Last month, Boma Information Minister John Achuon accused Jonglei youth of raiding at least 25,000 head of cattle and burning down villages in Boma. Thousands of residents were displaced by the violence. Jonglei Information Minister Akech Deng did accuse the Boma youth of abducting up to 200 children and raiding more than 16,000 head of cattle within a year. Bangol says youth from both communities agreed to sign a cessation of hostilities agreement in Juba within a week. He says the committee has urged Jonglei and Boma officials to ensure that the two states are free from any armed youth which threaten the security of both states. Bangol says the committee is calling for the creation of a buffer zone between the two communities.
And collect and hand over all the abducted women and children and raided cattle within a month, to a high-level committee in place that will be decided by the same committee.
Jonglei State Youth Leader Ayuen Gwen Ror says withdrawing armed youth from each other's territory and returning all abducted children and cattle to their rightful owners is the only way to end the fighting in the area. Ror says youth from Jonglei have begun to withdraw from an area they occupied in Boma after intercommunal fighting broke out earlier this month.
And we already withdrew to our borders, but we are calling them to return the children and to withdraw their youth from our land. After that, we will be staying here safe. But if we are going to sign this ceasefire and they didn't withdraw their youth, and we already been withdrawn.
Efforts to reach Boma state youth leaders were unsuccessful. A Boma state church leader, Pastor John Kajaj, is urging the two communities to immediately cease hostilities and use this opportunity to stop any future violence between the two states.
We as the church leaders always preach that people should stop this kind of behavior, as well as what they mentioned, child abduction. This is what is not also good for both sides to practice.
This marks the second peace initiative in 6 months between the Dinka Bor and Murle communities. Last December, the two communities signed a peace deal to end fighting, but it was violated within weeks. First Vice President Guy's committee encouraged both sides to fully commit to ceasing all hostilities and to ensure that no provocations are carried out in either state. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A youth leader from Bor is still in hiding because he says he will be arrested by the National Security Agency after he and other five leaders organized a protest in Bor during the visit by the first Vice President Taban Dengai last week. Gabriel Marial Madid says he and other organizers protested during Guy's visit to Bor because they wanted officials to address growing insecurity in their villages. Instead, he says security officials threatened them with arrest, calling them disruptive. Two organizers were arrested over the weekend, but Marial told Ayen Bior he is in hiding with other organizers in the bush.
In the process, some of the members of national security cocked their guns, and they were actually telling her that, you people, where will you go? We are going to hand you down. They're telling her some threatening words, of which we fear. But then after that, also, some of the youth leaders came to us, and we talked to them. Then we dispersed. After that, in the evening, they took one of our activists, Mr. Deng. They took him. Where he was moving the city, then he was taken, was tortured, then he was taken to the prison. Then from there, we actually realized that there's a problem going on. That was starting now, where we start hiding up to now.
Who exactly was threatening you?
Members of National Security and CID.
And how many of you have gone to jail?
Two of us are actually arrested, and we are now four in hiding place. We are identified and we are actually being threatened. Our families are actually intimidated and also our relative also called to bring us to the custody of national security. And we made sure that we left and we're actually now in our hiding place. And we're actually hoping that the civil society in the Holy State will intervene and the civil society within South Bank will intervene. And the human rights group will also intervene, and the United Nations also. We are hoping that has been intervention for the release of our two guys who are arrested, and also for us also to be actually given chance to present ourselves in a peaceful way.
And what happens if there are no mediators? What happens if the civil society doesn't step up to help you?
If there is no change at all, we are going to report to UNMISS. The situation is worsening now.
What do you mean the situation is worsening?
What I mean by situation is worsening is that our relatives are calling us dead in hiding place because they are being called by members of national security, and that's what is going on. Also, we are getting stuck. There's no food, there's no water because they have actually come to some of the villages which are actually isolated, about 20 kilometers away from town of Bor, which are actually abandoned. So we are living in the areas where there are no food, no market, there's nothing. And we rent without anything in our pockets. So life here is actually not easy. Since we left, we're actually only been drinking dirty water.
Following reports of a recent Ebola outbreak in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudanese health officials announced measures to prevent the spread of the deadly disease. Health Ministry and World Health Organization officials say they will start screening travelers at Juba International Airport for Ebola. Health Ministry officials also say a technical committee will deploy surveillance team at border crossing along the South Sudan DRC border. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Health Minister Ria Guy Cock says the measures include a 24-hour surveillance at all border crossing points linking South Sudan to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Guy says a team of NGO and government officials will be dispatched to the border to check whether protocols at health facilities are adequate and effective at controlling the spread of the deadly disease.
We are going to start the screening at all the entry points, starting with Juba International Airport as from tomorrow. And depends on the availability of logistics. Will also put in place the screening measures in other entry points that will be determined by the technical committee.
Government, WHO and other agencies officials say they will step up Ebola preventive measures in Budwe, Amadi and Yei River states and at all border crossings between South Sudan and the DRC. Health officials adopted the Ebola preventive measures today following a joint stakeholders meeting at the Ministry of Health. Although Guy says the risk of the hemorrhagic disease spreading to South Sudan is low, the outbreak in the DRC puts South Sudan at risk. Abdulmomen Asman, the WHO country director in South Sudan, says the public should not panic.
The land border crossings is where we need to focus our efforts for now. Our port health services need to be reinforced. Maybe we can take opportunity. I have seen nobody ask anybody for yellow card, for instance, coming to South Sudan. Nobody asks for anything. Sometimes you don't see the health workers at the port of entry.
Asman says preventive measures must be stepped up at all commercial points of entry into South Sudan from DR Congo.
There is an ongoing outbreak response, and we hope that it will be contained. But in spite of the low risk, we are not going to sleep here in South Sudan. We are going to ensure that we are ready for any eventualities.
The Ebola outbreak was declared last week in the DRC. 11 cases were confirmed. 3 people recently died from the disease. An outbreak of Ebola was last reported by WHO in 2004 in the former Western Equatoria state town of Yambio, which was then part of Sudan. At the time, 7 people died of the epidemic. 17 confirmed cases were reported. Ebola, also known as a hemorrhagic fever, is a rare and deadly disease that can cause severe bleeding and organ failure. It can spread among humans and non-human primates such as monkeys, gorillas, and chimpanzees.
That report by Waki Simon Wudu brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Dal Pin by Vivian. We have been listening to Vivian singing in her native Shuluk language with the title of the song Pinjdal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can meet us back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.